Hi, friends. Welcome back to Tay Talks. I hope you're enjoying the library of content that we've got. Always welcome your feedback. Remember that. So please send it if you have it. Today's episode features Cassandra Cleary. Cassandra is and has become a dear friend of mine. Cassandra and I met also through Nanette. If you've heard a couple of the other episodes that have been released, you know that a lot of my contacts, colleagues, friends, lifelong friends have been made through that organization and through the neuroendocrine tumor space. And you'll also see that not everybody is actually a clinician in each of these spaces. So Cassandra is the heartbeat of that organization. She keeps it going. I don't even know if it's fair to give her a title. In getting to know Cassandra over time, I've gotten to learn a lot about her. She's a superwoman. She is also mother to the most adorable kiddos that exist. If she lets me post some pictures of them in our blog post, I absolutely will. Basically, if you have a Cassandra in your life is a little bit better. And that's, I think, where I'm going to leave that because today's episode will tell you everything else that we were able to talk about anyways, but I think the thing that I take away from this relationship specifically is that you never know where you're going to meet people that have a profound impact on your life. And Cassandra is one of those. So enjoy the conversation. If you have any questions, feedback, as always, leave it in the comments descriptions, and I'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
I wish I would have had a leader who put me in a space to know that it is okay to make mistakes, to not hyper focused on being perfect. It's not about if you're going to make a mistake. It's about when you do, will you have grace and how do you recover from it? And will you learn? Will you do better? And I was also managing a facility. But it's about an hour away from my home. I was commuting every day, even while I was pregnant. I was driving up and down the Northway. I keep bags in my car for when I had to throw up on my ride.
Oh my God.
It was awful. But after I had my son, it was one of those realizations that I actually kind of liked the job.
If you were a cereal box in the grocery store aisle, which cereal would you be and why? And you would have some people just look at you like, why on earth are you asking me this question? It's a silly question, doesn't make any sense. But then you had some people that just stopped and thought about it and gave you a legit answer. It's not a trick question, you can't get it wrong. What's one thing that people that you work with don't know about you?
Boy, one thing that people I work with don't know about me, I think maybe like to talk about myself a little too much.
Yeah.
So, maybe they don't know that I do have kind of like a reserved, shy side. I think I put myself out there a lot. And so I try to always get along really well with people and I can be very extroverted in that way. I really try to communicate a lot and everything like that. But then there's moments where I'm just like, here, am I doing? Yeah. So maybe they don't know that that actually really exists within me. I like to share stories about where I've been, what I've done, and how I got there. And so from a professional side, I think they know those things. And then they also know a lot about me personally, just because I'm an overshare.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your go-to like regroup and I need to step away moment when you get overstimulated or overwhelmed?
Yeah. So overstimulation happens a lot, whether it be like personally in my life or at work or whatever it is. And I think for me, it's going quiet. I really like if I get a chance to drive somewhere in my car. I love music. I love having that beat and feeling music. But if I get a chance to just drive to the store and do it in complete silence with not a noise happening besides the thing around me, that's a very sweet spot where I'm able to decompress, just let my thoughts linger and have that moment to myself.
I love that. What about at conferences? What do you do?
At conferences, I hide.
Okay, good.
At conferences, if I really need to, I will. I'll step away for a second. I can run to my room and take a second and sit down and just take a breath. I have a window, look out the window for a second. If I have a balcony, step outside and take a deep breath where no one can find me. It feels like even at conferences, even if you're going and you run to use the ladies' room, you run into everybody in there and they have something to say and ask you a question. Like, can I have a second?
Talking to somebody yesterday about just that. And we were talking about how we both refuse to bunk with anybody at conferences for that reason. Not that we're terrible people or that we don't want to help you save a buck, but it's just that 20 minute between the end of the conference and when you have to get up and go to dinner and be social again with the same people all over again. It's like, I need that space.
You need that reprieve and you need that space. Yeah. I always think it is interesting on a business trip when you do have people who are almost forced to be in a room together, because it's like, as adults, we definitely have our things. We have we need space. We have certain things that we do or don't like. Someone may be a sleeper and they may not want you to open that shade. Right. You may be a morning person. You're like, oh, let me let all the beautiful light in. So it's interesting, unless you're really opting to do that because you want to truly stay with that person. You have a great with them and you guys are cool.
No, I don't enjoy that at all. But, oh my gosh. Okay, what was your first job ever?
My very first job ever was delivering papers. So before in New York State, you had to go on working papers. And the one exception that we could figure out was I could deliver newspapers. And so I had a route and I would get up before high school and I would go and deliver newspapers on First Street, where I live, and my dad had a route on Second Street so that he could be delivering papers at the same time as me and be with me. So that was my very first job before I was even really allowed to have a job. My very first job on the books was packing groceries at a local store. But I was pretty well versed throughout my whole younger career. I was a photo lab supervisor.
Okay.
End of high school. And that was back in the day when there was still 35 millimeter actual film. Yeah. So I used to have to stick my arms in the machine and develop film. And I've had to call the authorities for some sketchy pictures before. So it was an interesting run. Yeah. I mean, this one was because there was a gentleman and a girl who seemed to be a little too young to be in the pictures with the gentleman. And so I brought him to a store manager and the manager was like, please. And so, yeah. I don't know what really came from it. You turn the information over. And then there's silly things like copyright, right? So people would come in when you first were able to start scanning pictures and making copies of them and stuff. And that's when I first got exposed to understanding whole copyright and what that means, because people would bring in pictures from photographers and studios and say, hey, I want you to make 6 copies of this for me. And I'd have to be like, do you have a release?
Yeah.
No, what's a release? I'm like, means you legally have the ability to make copies. Yeah, so it was an interesting time to be in all this. So different before this digital age.
I know. Now it's hard with the copyright and people are getting creative with putting their signature within photos so that they can track where they're going and how to find them and stuff like that. That's interesting. I've never thought about the fact that you could see something that you might have to report. That's crazy.
That was part of the job, is that you had to check the content.
What was your favorite thing you ever printed? Do you have a memory of the photos that were just stunning?
I would really enjoy anything that was like scenic back then, though. Anybody who would take pictures that seemed a little more artistic.
So do you do photography?
After college, I got into it and I actually was doing food photography. When I was in high school and I was in a culinary program, they brought us into a studio and there was a food photographer and they're doing pictures that you would see in all of the ads and everything. So she was showing us the tricks of the trade, like how they would have something that would be raised up in a bowl and then they would put down Elmer's glue and that would be the milk and then they'd strategically place pieces of cereal. And so when you're taking that picture, it looks like this beautiful thing that's not really the cereal that you're eating at home. Or she was showing us how they would take a raw chicken and airbrush the chicken so it looked like perfectly browned and cooked and moist and delicious, but chicken was raw. And I just remember thinking that that was so cool that that was someone's job. She was actually a food stylist. So I thought that was cool. And so that kind of piqued my interest. I started doing food photography. I love cooking at home and doing all of these things. And then I had my first son and I had to switch my medium to children. Yeah. For him, his first year of life, every single month, I did a different curated photo shoot. Fast forward to my twins. I'm lucky if I
Now you get to
each month. But yeah, it's like a side passion. I've done it for hire for people and their families, pictures and Mother's Day and fall photos and that stuff. So it's in my back pocket, but life is busy these days. So I do it as
well. Oh gosh, I love that. Okay. So you did culinary photography, but you also were in culinary school. So was that the first gig right out of high school? Or I guess education-wise, yeah.
Well, I actually took culinary in high school. When I was in high school, I was struggling so bad with taking a language. I was taking Spanish, and I'm like, I can't get this. I was getting barely C. I was like rearing towards the D end. And I would ask my friends for help, and they're teaching me awful. Nothing like the textbook Spanish that you're spelling. Bad words. I'm like, guys, I know that this doesn't sound like this is what this
is. Yeah, this is street smart, so, but this is not going to help me in life.
No, like bad smart, like bad words. Like, guys, you're setting me up for failure. And so I went to my guidance counselor in school and I said, there's something about it I cannot grasp. It was really a struggle for me. And my guidance counselor was like, well, you can take nursing or you can take culinary. And I was like, wait, I can cook? School.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, you can take culinary. And if you take, you don't have to take language. I was like, sign me up yesterday. And so I did. And we had an externship for amount of the year. So I would go to school for basically a half day. And then I went to a local restaurant and I would cook in their kitchen and they'd report back to my culinary teacher. And then my senior year, I had worked up so many credits for school that I really only had a half a day of school. I would go to school for period one, period two, and then I do my externship, and that would be my day, with the exception of gym days. I had to come back for gym. And that year, I did an internship at Fresno's restaurant at the time, and there I would prep during the day, but they wanted me to work for them, so they made an agreement with my high school that I would not do the same role that I did while I was interning, and that I would do something different. So I'd go there during the day to intern, and I'd and then I'd go back at night. So I work the window. I slap your hand. Don't you take something out of my window. If I didn't call you for it, it's not ready. Don't take it out of my window. And so I worked there doing that all through the rest of high school. And then actually when I went to culinary school for college, I worked there as their lead server.
Do you miss that?
No. I won't age myself. But at the time, culinary arts was not the bright, fun, shiny thing that it is.
Yeah.
Still very male dominated.
Okay.
And being in most kitchens was still, didn't matter if it was a line cook, the executive chef, sous chef, was mostly men. And so coming up in that, especially being super young when I was cooking, 17, 18, 19, 20, it was sometimes even a little intimidating. And so I think that when I did end up going to the front of the house, hospitality, food and beverage piece that I absolutely love about what I do was amplified because I was able to be seen and respected. And so I never really missed the kitchen in that way because I would just cook home.
Yeah.
I never really lost my love for food in that way.
That's good.
I mean, my parents tell me stories about when I was a little kid, I would sit in the tub and I'd pull all my play food into the tub and my mom would walk in and I'd be doing a cooking show telling people, and this is what we're going to make now, audience. Like before cooking show, before the Food Network was a thing. And so it's always been ingrained in me. My dad was a chef when I was growing up. He worked at various restaurants. He worked at Avon Old Farm School, which is a boys boarding school in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. My mom is white and my father is black. When my parents first started dating, my mom didn't know how to cook for my He's like, I know this German stuff over here, but what you guys got going on over here? So she would actually walk to my grandma's house and take lessons from my
grandma. That's so sweet, yeah.
To learn how to cook for my dad. And so it's just something that's always been ingrained in our family as kind of our thing, the thing that we do together. And so while I never lost zest for cooking, it just didn't translate professionally.
Do you feel like you learned anything working kitchens that you translated into your hospitality?
Yeah, for sure. I think that
The
trajectory of my career is being able to see how different components within hospitality really all tie into each other. So I think working in the kitchen gave me insight into whether it be serving, whether it be managing the front of the house or any of those kind of things. I think it gave me the insight into how the kitchen works, what the challenges are. It definitely gave me a level of respect for the kitchen, right? Because I think what happens is that people, especially in restaurants, show up and they might show appreciation to their server. They might show disdain to their server, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But they don't really think about the people who are back there putting the love and heart and energy into actually making the meal. So even if it was just understanding how much work goes into actually executing, whether it be a restaurant or a catering event or any of those kind of things, it kind of helps give you a broad insight into how to navigate the front of the house for sure.
Talk about the shift from the restaurant industry in that sense to the hospitality industry.
Yeah. So after college, during college, I interned at Disney World. I did a full semester there and I worked at the Yacht and Beach Resort, Beaches and Cream, which is a 50s style soda baller. And so I would wear a poodle skirt and a big puffy sleeve shirt with pastel colors to work every day to go scoop ice cream and make hot dogs.
Oh my gosh.
But I didn't go away to college. So it was really my first insight into adulthood. Time I had to pay bills on my own or do any of those things. So if I did get much of anything from that experience, it was paying bills. And then I also did internships with Levy Restaurants at the Kentucky Derby. So I went to Churchill Downs twice while I was in college. I did Derby and I did a Breeders Cup. And I absolutely loved the experience. They say the Derby is like most exciting 30s in sports, right? And so it really, it's pretty amazing to be part of to see it. I didn't end up moving to Milwaukee after college, and Levy Restaurants is headquartered in Chicago. And so they were doing a open call for people to work in concessions at the Wisconsin Center District, which is an arena, a theater, and a convention center in downtown Milwaukee. And so suit and I got my resume and I went down to this opening call for staff. I remember the manager, his name was Joe. He walked in and he's like, "I think you're in the wrong place." And I was like, "I don't know, aren't you hiring for concessions?" And he's like, "Yeah," which is why I think you're in the wrong place. I told my story and told him that I had just moved there on a whim. I didn't have a job and I was interested in the company. I had these great experiences in college and I just wanted to get in some way. And he walked me into the director of operations office and he said, "All right, we have this young lady. I think we have an opportunity here." And they were like, "Listen, we need a concessions manager. What do you want to do?" I want to be a concessions manager. So I started with them as a concessions manager. I ended up then transferring to the Harley-Davidson Museum. And I went there as a catering manager. And then I went to the BMO Harris Bradley Center, which is for the more LA. And I worked there as the senior manager of food and beverage over concessions. And so I worked my way through the company. And so that was really my first transition into not really restaurants, more sports and entertainment, food and beverage, large scale, that kind of deal. And it was very exciting because that's just, sports and entertainment is an exciting world. I was younger then, I was in my early 20s, I was able to keep up with the rhythm. There was different events happening all the time. I mean, I literally have stories of sleeping underneath my desk for a couple hours. And then we also traveled during our off season. I've done NBA, PGA, NFL, NASCAR, you know, you name it, the gambit of the different types of events. I've done 4 Kentucky Derbies, 2 Breeders Cups. So it's a pretty exciting world. But that was my first job out of college, kind of getting into the front of the house side of things.
That's insane. That's not a typical first job, right? You're getting to travel the country, get to see people from every walk of life, people in places that you'd never even think to expect. Did you ever have that vision for yourself, or was it purely, you think, chance that that worked out?
The particular role, chance, but the type of job, vision. My dad is one of 14 kids. My grandfather had 7 boys, 7 girls. They go boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl down the line.
Oh my gosh.
And out of them, my dad was the first to graduate college. I have about 36 cousins in my generation. And I do believe those 36, I was the first to graduate college. And I think that for me, I was in this space where it was very important for me to not have a job, but to have a career. Mm-hmm. Kind of saw through society and everything that had transpired with my family and how hard my dad worked. One of the things that is really important to get a good in life is to create a good financial situation for yourself, which really starts with solidifying yourself in a career. And so I took that very seriously. That was a very clear end goal for me, not to just have an hourly wage paying job, but more so a career path where I could see myself continuing. So I would say that not specifically the role itself in sports and entertainment kind of landed in, and it was a lucky land because it was a pretty cool way to work through my 20s. But I do think that the where I was going and how I was navigating it was going to be some sort of career, and it was going to be in food and beverage. Me graduating college with honors was solely because I was so interested in what I was specifically going to college for. I think if I do go for gen ed or pick a different career path that didn't really fit me as well, I don't know how well I would have done. I think I loved culinary arts. I think I loved hospitality, and think that it was something that gave me the backing and the know-how to feel confident and moving forward. So exciting.
Well, what was the first ever event that you ran from start to finish by yourself?
Probably the first big event that I ran start to finish by myself that's memorable to me, where I was like, wow. Yeah. When I worked at the Wisconsin Center District, we got a month-long run of the Lion King musical when it was still pretty new.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those times where I remember being like, wow, I got through that, because it was a month-long run. I think, if I remember properly, there was only one day of the week where they didn't have shows, but that was just one venue out of the three venues that I was managing. So we could also have an auto show going on at the convention center, and we could also have a basketball game, like all three facilities on some of these.
Or booked,
Yeah, and so it's one staff, one management team, and we're working all three of these venues. I mean, I pushed hot boxes full of hot across these city streets to get from venue to venue. And so I can remember that being, and that was one of the times when I can remember literally sleeping at my desk and like, okay, we got to get up and get started again. I have coffee breaks starting at 6 a.m. for a group that's in the convention center. And I have a UWM game happening at the arena starting at 3 o'clock, and then two runs of the theater show in the theater today. So it was a feat, no small feat.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it all, or were there parts that you could do without?
I mean, in any role, there's parts that you can do without. I think that while I love managing people, I think that probably part of what I could do without is managing the personalities, right? The more people you have to manage, the more you have to bend and wiggle and cater. Yeah. And I think that it's just like when I worked at the BMO Harris Bradley Center, I want to say we had a staff in concessions of about 125 people. We had a nonprofit coordinator who was working with our nonprofit groups. They could come in and run concession stands for us in order to make money for whatever organization was. We had supervisors, I think about 15 stand leads. And so in that, it comes a balancing act when you're the person who has to deal with the HR matters, when you have to deal with the scheduling, when you have to deal with the meticulousness of how to even run concessions. Most people don't even know how meticulous it is to run concessions. When you go up to a concession stand and you're like, hey, can I have a cup? And they tell you no. It's because they represent that dollars in their stand. They count everything into the stand before an event.
Oh, wow. Any
game ads that happen at the time, they add those to their stand sheet, and then they count everything out at the end. And then at my desk, I'd be sitting there and reconciling the money that was turned into our cash room at the end of the night to their inventory and saying, hey guys, I'm missing $1,200 debt. And then so we'd have to go back and investigate, where did this happen? Like, how did it happen? And so it really is that meticulous. And so it was an interesting thing to learn and go through, because when you're just a spectator, you don't realize all of the work that goes behind making sure that crazy broad machines like that actually runs.
Yeah. Is there a mistake that you made either in the kitchen or during your tenure in the hospitality space that you feel changed how you approach things forever, or that's very memorable?
I don't know if I can think of a specific mistake that I made versus being a little older and having a little more wisdom, in the sense of maybe not being as confident as when I was more of a green manager, right? And so not standing in my space and being able to use my authority in a way that made it seem like I knew what I was talking about. I think there were times that I can think of where I hesitated on something, or I didn't know exactly how to handle a situation. I think as you learn and as you grow and as you work in different roles and with different people, you're able to compile all of that knowledge and create a better version of yourself. But I think that as a young colored woman, I was intimidated to forward facing and to be assertive and to live comfortably in my space and in my role. And so being timid sometimes, I think, may have been a thing when I was younger, but not anymore.
What shifted it for you? Was there a pivotal moment you can think of that this intimidation just, it turned off, or did it come slowly?
Yeah, I think that it was something that gradually happened, but I also think that, as I mentioned, the industry sometimes can be a little more male dominated. So I think that there were things that put you in a weird space. So I have to let people know who I am and I mean business. You get to a space where you have to stand up for yourself. And so that allows you to build confidence, to stand in your glory and just go, here I am, I've arrived. Now I have a little more knowledge behind me. I have a little more credential behind me. I'm able to show that I know what I'm talking about and being good at what I do. So when you learn and you're good at what you do and you're the type of person who, if you're the one who has to go in and clean the toilets, you'll do it. So you're leading by example.
I feel like once you get to that point, you don't really come back from it. Right? It takes a lot to bring you back to, I don't know if insecure is the right word, but that doubtful period,
it's like
right?
a timidness. And don't think that you easily go back to that. I think you have to be in a situation where you really were uncomfortable. And so now you're being timid. But I think once, especially for women, once you are able to get in that headspace where you do feel confident in your knowledge and your power, you don't really revert back to that self. And that's across the board. That's personally, professionally, it's almost like being able to find a space of understanding your non-negotiables, being able to set and keep boundaries. And I think that professionally, that's something that you are able to do. I learned throughout those years, as I was working very hard, that in most places, especially companies, you're pretty replaceable, right? And so when you're giving your all and not really thinking about what am I really getting in return, once you get in those spaces, it's a little hard.
What's something you wish you would have heard from a mentor when you were coming up in that time?
I wish I would have had a leader who put me in a space to know that it is okay to make mistakes, to not be hyper focused on being perfect. It's not about if you're going to make a mistake. It's about when you do, will you have grace and how do you recover from it? And will you learn? Will you do better next time? And so I think having someone who would have gave me the autonomy to feel comfortable in making a mistake would have probably been something that I could appreciate. I don't remember exactly what mistake was made, but I do remember having a manager who clearly blamed me for a mistake that was not really my mistake.
Yeah.
How that made me feel and what headspace that put me in. And I was a manager myself managing other people.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a role reversal where the manager that takes credit if everything is going good, but then blames if things are not going well. I can remember feeling like super disappointed and feeling like I didn't have the autonomy to make a mistake, because if I did, I was going to be the one who was being blamed in a negative way and having to explain myself. So having that advice that it is okay to make mistakes.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody else about that the other day, about how people are so afraid to make a mistake that you almost stunt your growth. Like when you're waiting for that perfection, when you refuse to color outside the lines, if you will, if you refuse to just navigate your way around a situation without having the answers ahead of you, well, then you're never going to be able to do it again. You're never going to be able to be put in a situation that things are uncomfortable and you figure it out. And I fear that that's where this new generation and new workforce is heading in. Everybody wants an SOP and wants a work instruction and wants something typed out that tells them exactly who, what, where, when, and how to address every issue. It's not that you don't want to help in that way. It's just that's not helpful. You need to, like you said, have a safe space to make a mistake. And I'm glad you said that, because I think that's something that's wildly ignored and probably one of the most important things to character development.
Yeah. And I think that at some point I realized that I'm no longer the young person working in the workforce. And so that's something.
You're still
and
the
so
young that's, person.
But that's something that I carry with me, just like motherhood. You want to provide for your children anything that you feel like you were missing when you were coming up. It's the same thing in the workspace. If you have anybody who you mentor, you directly manage, you want to be able to put them in a position where maybe some of the shortcomings of those that you worked with and how they could have aided you or protected you or helped you be the best version of you, that you are able to be that for the next generation. I feel like that's something that I try to be cerebral about. I try to think about creating a space where people are able to talk to me about any challenge that they have. And more importantly, if there's something that goes wrong, understanding that if I had any part to play in that, I'll forward facing take the brunt of any blame and then talk to the person on the back end about how we could have done that better. And so I think that that's something that's a direct correlation to my own journey and the things that I felt like I could have used coming up within that journey.
When did you decide to make the switch from hospitality to ADG? Not that that's not hospitality, but different.
It's association management and event planning. It really is. So I decided to make the change after I actually tried to get out of hospitality and food and beverage altogether. I had my first son, and the industry is one that uses and abuses you. It's nights, weekends, long days. It's a lot of work. And it doesn't really matter which sector you're in. I've really run the gambit on the different things that you could do. And the role that I was in when my son was born was that I was a property and sales manager for a prominent catering company here in upstate. But I was working in Lake George for them. They had partnered with the newest Marriott in Lake George, and they were the exclusive caterer Marriott. So I was the only person who worked on property. I was selling the property, doing all of the event planning with the brides or the events that are happening, whether it be corporate or family. And I was also managing the facility. But it's about an hour away from my home. I was commuting every day, even while I was pregnant. I was driving up and down the Northway. I keep bags in my car for when I had to throw up on my ride.
Oh my God.
But after I had my son, it was one of those realizations that I actually kind of liked the job. I liked the property, but it was no longer going to work for my lifestyle. And I also questioned, no matter what other role I took in what I was currently doing, when I was in restaurants, there's so many times where I have to go in. And so I was thinking to myself, with now raising a child, how do I fit this lifestyle and raise my child the way that I want to? And I didn't see how it could equate. I didn't have a clear path forward. And so I said to myself, maybe it's time to get something that has a little more work-life balance and has a semblance of the ability for me to be able to care for my family while still having a career. So I went into pediatric dentistry. One of my girlfriends. That's
quite a shift.
One of my girlfriends was newly working at this local pediatric dentist office, and she's like, hey, we're hiring. You should come over here. There's opportunities. You can move up. Well, decent pay. But the most important piece is that when I was done with my day, I walked away from work and I didn't think about it again. I have to do anything that had to do with work until I clocked back in the next day. And I hadn't had that pretty much my entire career. And I was bored to tears. I was,
I'm sure,
beyond bored to tears. So it's a private practice. The doctors are amazing. I actually go back every year and I work their holiday party for them every single December.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, since I left there. But that was me trying to placate to prioritizing my family. I think that what happens with a lot of moms is that for us, we try to decide which one is almost more important. And until you have to really give one up, you don't know how you're going to feel about it. And so I really didn't like how slow it was. Maybe I would have found another office job or something that gave me a little more excitement. I wouldn't have felt so much like that. But I really did feel like I was giving up a piece of me. I had the time to spend with my family now. And I really did prioritize my family in that year that I was working there. But I also didn't love it for me personally. And so I had a girlfriend who was working at ADG. She's like, Sandra, we need you. Listen, come over here. You have the hospitality. You have the food and beverage. Now, I'm not saying you can completely walk away once you leave work, but it's not being enthralled in the operation side of food and beverage. And so I was like, I'm not sure about it, but let me think about it. Let me give it a chance. And then I interviewed with the owner of ADG. And I just felt such a kindred spirit with the owner, woman who had started this business from nothing on her own. She's running organizations. She's running nonprofits, associations, corporations. And so the way that she spoke to me with honesty about the role is, I think, what sold me. There's just something about how earnest and honest she was that I was like, I like it. Yeah, let's do it. And I did. I did not know what I was doing for the first period of working at an association management company. I really didn't know much about how associations, how nonprofits at all before working there. So there was a lot of on-the-job learning. But what I did know was how to run an event or how to detail an event. And so those skills were very cleanly transferred. And I just kind of fell in love with being on the other side of things and having almost an inside track when it comes to working with venues and to contract negotiations. It was a pretty seamless transition in my specific role, mm-hmm. which is event planning for associations and nonprofits. But then I had clients that were like, what about being our executive director? So I also transitioned into being an executive director of associations. And so there was more learning to happen on that side. But I think that that also is what kind of makes the work exciting as well, is, you know, and working for mission-driven organizations is pretty fulfilling.
Yeah. You mentioned how the industry is not that conducive to work-life balance, especially for a mother, especially for a woman, because that's the reality of it. Do you think it's that the industry can't be conducive, or that we're choosing to stay in a system that's archaic or unnecessary? Is that the nature of the job and it is what it is? Or is it one of those things that could be optimized and could potentially change?
I think if we're talking hospitality in the sense of working in logistics, it all depends on your personal makeup and what work-life balance looks like to you. Because the reality is that it's long hours. And I don't know how you necessarily change that, because you have to physically be on the job. And these aren't right. 9 to 5 hours. And so I think that the challenge comes in with that kind of role. What work-life balance, what works for your family looks like for you. I think that there's still opportunity for women in those spaces. But if the work-life balance for you is being home in the evenings with your kids, or being able to for sure drop them off to school and pick them up from school, then not necessarily. But if you're able to navigate different work schedules and structures, then it can work for you. Personally, I was at a space where I had already been working in hospitality for about 15 years at that time. And so I think that with the industry being archaic or not really advancing and moving along with time and not catering to women, I think it's relative. You can make it work for you, but does it work in the way you want it to? My current work situation is that post-COVID, I never went back to the office. And luckily for me, by that time, I was working for my current employer, which is a small woman-owned business. And she was okay with thinking outside of the box about what a young mother needed versus what the company needed. And so being able to have behind the scenes conversations with her about me wanting to work from home, I may have client meetings all day long, but I also have the autonomy to step away from my computer if I need to for a little bit. And then I also may be sending out emails at midnight, but my work is going to get done. For me, I'm blessed with the opportunity to work for a woman who champions women.
What would you tell somebody that wanted to get into these spaces is the most important attribute to have, and how to seek out opportunities like that? Because not everybody's going to fall into a career path exactly like yours, but how do you set yourself up to really network in the best way possible for this line of work? So it looks different, I think, for every career.
Yeah, I think it does look different. And that's what I was going to say, is to not be afraid to network. Seek out people. Social media is such a strong tool these days. And I think that LinkedIn for professionals really is a great opportunity to try to connect with people who are in an industry that you're interested in learning about. Don't be afraid to do internships. There's internship opportunities, whether they're paid or unpaid. But then also just kind of setting yourself apart too, right? Like figuring out what makes you different than the million other people trying to work in a specific workforce right now? So being humble enough to understand that sometimes the role you perceive yourself to be ready for may not be the starting ground in order to get your foot in a door, and not being afraid to prove yourself to people. Sometimes you have to create your own opportunity. So if it's a matter of starting here when you believe you should be here, but giving yourself some grace, showing people why you believe that you deserve what you believe you deserve, I think is really important.
You're absolutely right. You can't teach a person to want to do things. You can't teach a person to show up every day and to be committed and to have eagerness to learn and do and figure things out and make mistakes and do all of that. I think that's huge for people across the board, regardless of the field, is show up. Your values, how you were raised, or how your upbringing made you who you are, those kind of things. That's not something that you can teach.
I feel like as women specifically, this is what happens to us. We feel like, I know deep down in my soul, I am the right person for you. I promise.
Yeah.
But being able to convey that and prove that to somebody is very difficult. So don't be afraid to do something that feels a little uncomfortable. Figure out how to set yourself apart, whether it be through how you write your resume or anything like that. Don't be afraid to stand out. Don't be afraid to be quirky.
Yeah. Yeah. That's your personality. Because you want the people that you work with every day to want to work with you every day. So if you're not meshing with them and you're interviewing the person that's hiring you at the same time, because that is what it is, it's a two-way interview. If you don't like it and they don't like it and the energy's off, both of you should move on. And if you do like it, that's great, because you might find somebody that gets it right away. I remember one of the first departments I worked at Moffitt was the phase one department. We were an interesting group, but we all got along very well and wanted to know if people would get our humor and our silly little things that didn't make any sense. So one of the standing questions in each of our interviews was, if you were a cereal box in the grocery store aisle, which cereal would you be and why? And you would have some people just look at you like, why on earth are you asking me this question? It's a silly question, doesn't make any sense. But then you had some people that just stopped and thought about it and gave you a legit answer. It's not a trick question. You can't get it wrong.
Well, you know what? You have to have disqualifiers. And so it's one of those things that really just quantifies how personable somebody's going to be. I think that that might speak to them almost being a team player. When you're asked a question like that, it gives you the opportunity to think outside of the box, be quick on your toes, and concede to something that maybe feels a little uncomfortable, but you're like, what would it be? I think I'd be the Wheaties box. That always has all the cool people on it, right? So whatever your answer.
That's an answer. Was there a mindset shift at all that had to happen when you switched from the hospitality industry to event planning and everything that come after that?
Yeah, I think that the mindset shift came in me understanding that I was on the other side of things now. I hadn't even done sales or detailing specifically, but from the venue side of things. And so now being the person who was working directly with the association or the nonprofit and being their planner and doing the programmatic piece, which is where you're taking the details of the event and really breaking it down into a structure that's going to make an event. You're doing the programmatic breakdown and figuring out who's going to talk, when are they going to talk, what is the flow, what is the run of show. And so all of these different pieces that go into creating an event, I hadn't necessarily had to deal with all of those pieces on the other side of things. So the shift really happened in me really understanding, how do I navigate communicating my needs to the old me while also understanding how the old me needs information to come over from the new me. And so that was what the shift was for me, just getting into this different headspace and this different avenue.
What's something that you feel like you're still learning in this space that you want to get more of?
A better understanding of technology when it comes to events. I think that it's not going anywhere. We're only going to continue to build and go further into the tech space. I jumped full throttle into tech when COVID happened. Like, we all of a sudden had to learn all of the things about telecommunications and different sites and platforms and running events online, virtual conferences, all of the things. But I wish I had some more time to delve into that side of things and just continuing to understand the landscape of large events, really large. I think that the most I've done at this point on the logistics side would be a couple thousand, on the actual planning side, about 600.
Did the twins change anything for you? Talk a little bit about that.
Oh my goodness. Yes, They will be 2 years old. I cannot believe next month.
I cannot
they've changed
believe that. I know.
A lot for me. You go through these things in life where you're like, yeah, I guess it was just meant to be. Husband and I, we decided to try for a daughter. We had a son together and we were like, all right, we'd be remiss if we didn't try for a daughter. If we get another boy, so be it. Okay. But if we can get our daughter, things will be good. And so we decided, and then just a couple of weeks after deciding that, we're like, you know what? Our life is okay. We're taking our vacations. My son was full-time in school now. I get some semblance of my day back. And then when I went to the doctor to get an ultrasound to see how far along I was, she's looking at the ultrasound and I was like, wait, what's this other circle here? And she's like, oh, that's a second sac. You could be having twins. And I was like, no, I can't. She's like, no, really? Yeah, you can. So I was only 4 weeks along and she said, we won't be able to know until. So for about 4 weeks, I was researching everything I could figure out. Like, why would I have a second sac? There's no egg in it. Like, can it still get it? I was trying to tell my husband. I was like, did you know there's a thing called vanishing baby syndrome? We're not having twins. It's just not happening.
Or one of them could eat the other, right? Yeah. There's that.
Yep. And so, yeah, 8 weeks, went back. She put that thing on my belly. I looked right at that voided sac that was there last time and saw a little circle in it. And I said, I'm having twins. She said, yes, you are. And so from that moment on, it was a journey, right? Because I was all of the things. I was geriatric. I was high risk.
God, I hate that term.
They change a lot for the better. But it also is a challenge. The reality is in 2025, balancing work, balancing children, finances. They were premature babies and they had to be on special formula. I can't get any assistance. It's tough. It's insane. But they are walking and talking and doing all of the things. And I did this with my first son too. I remember telling my husband, I can't wait until he can say mama. He's like, yeah, okay, you wait until he can say it. And now I'm like, can you guys unlearn my name a little bit? Like, not
please,
all the
yes,
way,
just
but a little bit.
Yeah.
Parenting is such a beautiful thing, but is a challenge in a way that I feel like not a lot of people acknowledge sometimes, and especially for women. If, again, I go back to the whole career piece and being very career minded at an early age, it puts you in this position where you're either having work guilt or parent guilt, right? But having the type of role that does allow me to care for my children in the best way that I can while maintaining a professional career and being able to be in a space where I hold importance, where I'm respected in my role. I think that it gives me that full-rounded feeling that I yearn for. Some days I complain. Now, if you were to ask my husband, some days I certainly complain about finding that balance, about how hard it is.
What's the hardest thing coming back to work that you feel like you had with the twins that you didn't have with your firstborn? And then what's one thing that you've had to give up and you don't think you'll be able to get back since having your kids? It doesn't have to be professional. It can be anything, really.
Yeah. So I'll start with the give up thing because it's something that actually sits on my mind quite often. I think that, at least in the spaces that I'm in, I'm not saying forever, I think that women in the world, in the space that I live in, didn't talk a lot about me, about how much you really give up of yourself to be mother specifically. Not in all situations, but in a lot of situations, the mother, even with a live-in father, is the primary parent. And so with that comes some of the invisible labor. It's figuring out when all the appointments are, who's going to be going where, when, what's coming up with each child, who has to do what. And so there's this element of you being everything to everybody around you. And even though you have family members and you have people to lean on and you have a husband, there's still this piece of you that's like, I'm everything to everyone else. And sometimes I can feel like, but no one's anything to me. Like I'm pulling it all together for everybody else while also keeping it all together for myself. And I think for me, what ended up being the thing that I don't think I anytime soon am getting back and I've had to be okay with, but it is still a challenge, is me being able to move freely. if I have to go anywhere or do anything, I have to figure out what is going on with my children, whether that's making sure my husband's going to be home so that the kids can stay with him, whether it's figuring out if my parents or my in-laws can take my kids. That's certainly sometimes a burden for me because I do travel. I plan conferences all over the country. And when those conferences actually happen, I physically go on site and manage and run the operations of that conference. And so there is an element of planning that has to happen in order for my family to be taken care of on a day-to-day basis when I'm the primary one doing that, in order for me to move around, and I don't get to move around freely. And that's a big example. A little example would just be, I can't get up and walk out of my front door and go to a store. I have to make sure that everything is still in accordance. I try to go to the gym as often as I can, and that's usually late at night when my family is now at rest, and I can mentally check out to go to the gym in a way that it allows me comfort in being able to step away and really step away for a little while. But to do that, I go to the gym at like 10 o'clock at night, right? And so I think that that's the thing that I don't see me getting back anytime soon, but that I didn't recognize was going to be such a shift and such a change. As far as me having to change mindset from my first son to my twins, I would say probably the big difference was just the physical suck that happened. My twins were born at 34 weeks. They were premature. My son spent an entire month in the NICU. My daughter came home day 4 when I came home. And so I was navigating having one child who was in the NICU, some very serious complications, and then one child who was able to immediately come home, having to go and see him every single day and spend that time with him, having to navigate also having a home with me at the same time. And so when I was returning back to work, I think that it was just getting back into a groove where I was actually working as well as caring for these two little humans. And I know people will say the saying, oh, if you got two, you might as well just go ahead and have 10, because, but not really. Like, if you have twins, you might as well stop. It is a lot of work.
You're done.
One of those things where having two at the exact same time is just a different level of challenge that I wasn't for. And so in going back to work and really trying to strike a balance between the pure exhaustion of having two newborns at one time and also having the mental aptitude to deal with all of these business things that are coming, several different hats all at one time while also full-time caring for children. It's,
you're basically Superwoman is what is
you know what,
you're
what?
Saying.
I'm going to take the title. I am going to take the title.
You absolutely are. I think
it is a lot of work.
I don't think it's an understatement. I think anybody who works with you or has even crossed paths with you in a personal or professional capacity can see how much heart and work and effort that you put into every single thing that you do and how things truly, like you said, organizations can replace you, quote unquote, but they can't replace you. There's not another person that they can slot into your slot that would fill your shoes. I don't even say they're big shoes to fill. There is no replacement. So take that. You are Superwoman. I'm sure the same happens at home. What is the funniest mute, unmute thing that has happened with the kids at home that you can think of? Like,
I'm pretty sure my older son, who's now about to turn 7, but he was, what, like 2, turning 3 when COVID happened. Yeah. And so we went to the video cameras and the video calls and everything like that. And I didn't have a separate office at the time. And I'm pretty sure he's definitely streaked. I can't
remember. Oh my God.
Naked. He gets grace though. He's a little kid. So nobody really gave me a heart attack.
So nobody said anything. Nobody if he did it now, anything. It might be.
I never had one of those moments where I was like wearing PJ bottoms or anything like that and stood up or anything. So I would say just my son definitely streaked.
Yeah.
But then also just him not understanding that mommy's in a meeting. And so I'd tell him, like, son, don't come over here. Don't come in my camera view. I'm in a meeting. But he'll still come over and just, like, lean in. I'm like, son. And then you're doing the talk out of the side of the mouth. So then inevitably it would happen where somebody would be like, Cassandra, you're talking, but you're muted. I'm like, no. I'm yelling at my child. No. I'm telling him, no.
Now we just go camera off. Yeah. Like, this is not what's a personal value that you have that you wouldn't compromise no matter what in the workspace?
Ooh, I'm big on giving respect. So I'm also big on receiving respect. Have definitely not compromised in many roles from early teen working till now about how people speak to me. And that's not me being combative. I've always had this motto that if my mother and father wouldn't speak to me that way, there is no way I'm going to allow you to speak to me that way. And so I've really navigated my life in that way, especially in a personal setting. My husband makes fun of me to this day because even if we're in a small argument and he tries to say a curse word, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why are we cussing? I'm not cursing at you. I'm just saying, damn. I'm like, that's a little too much. It's something that I've always, for some reason, has always kind of been my thing. I don't like people to talk to me sideways because I'm not going to do that to you. And so if I'm starting from a place of respect, even if we're not seeing eye to eye on something, even if there's been an issue that we need to resolve, I'm going to need you to tone that down a little bit. And I do it very respectfully, very professionally. I've literally had people at my job come and say, Cassandra, can you respond to this? Because this person might be a little sideways and very professionally, you might have to check somebody. But yeah, that's kind of probably my non-negotiable red flag. If we come from that space, we're probably not going to have a great conversation.
Not the one. I love that. I love that. Is there something that you are trying to unlearn in your life right now?
Yeah, I think what happens when you are balancing all of these things, and especially as a woman, once you have children, you have to learn how to give yourself grace. So I guess I'm trying to unlearn the notion that there is a time stamp on certain things, that there's a time stamp on getting yourself back together, your physical body, your mental space. There is a time stamp on feeling confident. There is a time stamp on achieving goals when you're also trying to literally raise humans.
I love that. I think everybody needs to hear that because it's very true. We are too hard on ourselves and the world is hard enough. We don't need to be adding that pressure to ourselves. I love it. Okay, quick fire. Okay. One superstition that you have.
You can't cross a pole. So if we're walking down the street together, you don't go on the opposite side of the pole. You need to come back and come back around that pole and walk on the same pole side.
Favorite compliment you've ever received?
I mean, all the girlies like to be told that they're pretty.
Yeah.
I really like when people compliment my cooking. If someone is unabashedly like, this is good.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that. Because you put your heart into it. You don't cook for just anybody either. Morning ritual that you never skip or try to never skip.
Morning ritual I try to never skip is going to be a work thing. I try to wake up and remember to look in my calendar and see what I have for the day so I don't miss a meeting.
I love
because
that.
Some days I'll get so enthralled in everything I have going on. And then I'll be like, I had a meeting at 9 a.m. So immediately opening my phone and just taking a look at what I have coming for the day so I don't forget where I'm at and stay grounded in my day.
Okay. A song that instantly will change your mood.
Depends on how I want my mood to change. I'm an R&B girly. So a lot of the songs are very much.
Yeah. You just need, like, you need a pick me up. What's the song that you're going to put on when, or like when, and nothing on your shuffle is getting there? What's the song you gravitate towards?
Might have to go old school. I might have to go back in the day. My favorite artist was Case. And so I might have to go to a little Case, or I might have to go to a little Mary J. Blige. It all depends on my mood, but that's kind of my vibe.
Right. I love that. One thing that you wish people asked more.
I wish that people asked, how are you, more genuinely. I think that people ask it as a formality, but they don't really care how you truly are. And so if you do answer that question with anything other than, oh, I'm great, is there really,
they freak out.
Is there really a want to understand why you're not great? And so, yeah, I wish that I felt more like when people asked me that I had a safe space to be honest about how I really am and them truly be interested in what my real answer
is. I like that a lot. If you had to pick another career completely unrelated to what you're doing, what would it be?
You know what? When I was coming up, it was like a toss up between food and beverage hospitality and interior design.
Ooh.
Really used to love interior design back in the day. To have the big back computer monitor book colored jelly. I actually bought a computer program, or architecture program. I would let there and design houses and stuff for fun and then let up the interiors.
Oh, I love that. Okay, last one. What's giving you hope today?
What's giving me hope is the ability to continue to grow. This life, it's over when the good Lord calls you home, and you never know when that's going to be. And so here, being able to figure out what's next and be excited not only for the future, but also to be able to be happy and live in the moment. And there's actually a sign above me that's on my wall that says, gratitude turns what you have into enough. And so it's this idea that being able to appreciate what you have in the here and now, but also be able to look forward to new opportunities and things that you have going on, I think is gives me hope that there's more to come. I haven't peaked yet. I'm getting up there in age.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, and some personal endeavors that I am hoping to continue to move forward. So.
I'm sure you will. This was so much fun. Thank you for spending some time with me. I appreciate it.
And so excited that you're doing this. Will.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to talk about?
No, I think that that'll be great. I'm actually getting ready to start my own blog about events
I love
and all that.
That
stuff. So it's called Yay. Behind the Event Scene, and it is about event planning. But there's a ton of different websites or companies that do event planning that have blogs and stuff like that. But this is geared more towards the actual planner or the vendor themselves, kind of like the inside track, not just, oh, this is how you plan an event, but this is pro tips and some So I have some posts that are out there that I've been playing with. I haven't officially launched it, but
Cool. So we can highlight that. Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. Congratulations. I'm excited for you.